Welcome to Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. I'm Troy Skinner, the host of the show and the pastor of Household of Faith in Christ, online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. Of course, you're listening to WFMD, and you can find the station online as well, WFMD.com. And Imran Razvi and Daniel Razvi, you can find them online at conqueredbylove.org. They're the co-pastors of a church in Thurmont called the Church That Meets at Imran's. If you were listening last week, you had the pleasure of us really entering into a lot of fisticuffs. We were arguing. It was a real throwdown. Actually, it was a lot of agreement. I'm sorry, I didn't have your mic on. Say it again.
That's the Mandela effect for you.
Yeah. So we were talking about drugs, whether they should be legal or not, and all of us took a... Well, politically, a lot of people would refer to as kind of a libertarian point of view, but I would argue it's the biblical point of view, and it's an area where the libertarians accidentally kind of get it right, because their worldview isn't necessarily biblical. But, you know, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every once in a while. And so now the piggyback on the drugs and it should be legal question is jail. Should they be legal? Should we have jails? Should there be a prison system? I took this kind of question for granted most of my life. Of course there should be jails. What are you talking about? What kind of question is that? In fact, it wasn't even a question I was asking, right? It wasn't a question people were asking of me. So I just went along with what the societal norm is. My whole life there's been jails. You know, you watch the old Cops and Robbers movies or the Cowboy and Indian movies, and there's the sheriff in town, and he takes away the guy's guns, and he puts him in jail. Like, they had jails back in the 1800s. Of course, jails have been around forever. And then you start really asking the question as you're reading the Bible, and there are jails in the Bible, but the question is, are the jails that we find in the Bible prescribed by God? Are they supposed to be there? And so I think my view on this is emerging a bit, although over the last couple of years, I've begun to formulate what I think is an opinion, but it's not super strong, and I'm finding it loaded with nuances. So I'll be curious to see. What do you think? Jails, prisons, should they exist?
No.
Well, you said, you know, even a couple hundred years ago, we had jails in this country. But those were holding cells. They weren't a systemic incarceration for the rest of your life. They were holding until you got in front of a judge, made a verdict, and you got branded, or you got capital punishment, killed, or whatever kind of capital punishment. You got stocks and whatever, and it was done. You don't spend years or days or weeks or months or years in a jail holding cell where society is now funding your, you know, quote unquote vacation from life.
And the thing is, either a person is harmful enough to the general public that they should not be allowed anywhere near anybody. In that case, this person should be killed if it's that violent of a person. That's the remedy. Or they're not that violent of a person. That's good. So then why are they in jail? They should be making restitution. Because we have, and I think the problem is in this country, we have a fundamentally wrong view of what crime, the consequences of crime are. We have this idea, and it's a communist idea basically, is that the society is harmed when you commit a crime. No, society is not harmed when you commit a crime. The person you harmed is harmed. The victim is harmed when you have a crime. And it's all, you know, it's a victimless crime. This is a victimless crime, or that's a victimless crime, you know. But even for murder, society is harmed, you know, or theft. Society was, no, the person you stole from is the one who was harmed. And, you know, if I steal your TV and then I go to jail, you still don't have a TV. That didn't fix the problem. All it did is put me off the streets. And now guess who's paying for my food? You are, if you're paying taxes. So it's completely backwards.
Yeah. Well, what about the victimless crime of Trump? The banks weren't suing him, and the New York State decided to sue Trump because he overvalued his properties and got better rates than he should have otherwise. And supposedly society was harmed in some way we can't really identify. And in fact, the prosecutor said to the appeals judge, well, we need to punish him because even though nobody was hurt in this case, but somebody could be hurt in the future, so we need to punish Trump. That was her actual...
Yeah, and I think I agree with you, but I would probably phrase it slightly differently. I do think that there is some sort of a harm done to the greater society. The society is diminished when there's a bunch of crime taking place.
Sure.
But I agree with
but
your point.
But to the extent that exists is so much less important.
It's certainly not merely society, and it's not mostly society. In fact, it's compared to the one who actually suffered the crime upon themselves.
And so there
it's
are
infinitesimal
few,
yes. by comparison.
And there are a few crimes that are so great and so awful, great as in bad, as in big, not as
right.
in good, right?
Right.
Great and awful as so that there would be no way to possibly ever make restitution, such as rape. You can't ever repay for that. Or murder, right? You can't
or
ever
treason.
Repay that. And so there's a few things that capital punishment is warranted, and the Bible makes it very clear what those things are. One of the things is blasphemy, which we've discussed on here before, whether that should be ever punished by the government or not. But there is a specific two specific reasons for a type of jail. One is while you're waiting for a trial, because I think a fair trial is a hallmark of a God-honoring society, having a fair trial in which you're presumed to be innocent, I think that's a very biblical concept. You can only be convicted on more than one witness, not just your word against my word. You've got to have credible evidence, preferably eyewitness testimony, and I think that's very, very important. So that part is good. And yeah, if you're concerned the person is actually doing going to do some more bad things or they're going to escape, then yeah, hold them until the trial, fine, but it needs to be quick. The other method, which this is the biblical version of a type of jail, is the sanctuary cities. Sanctuary cities are a form of house arrest, like an ankle monitor. It's the biblical version of an ankle monitor, basically. If you are committed manslaughter and maybe it wasn't intentional murder, but maybe somebody's accusing you of that, it was, first of all, an appeal system. So if you didn't like your verdict, you can go run to this other city. And it was predetermined if you got to the city walls, then you had another trial because there's a prescription for having another trial. The elders and everybody would do that. And if it was determined that this wasn't really murder, but it was manslaughter, it wasn't intentional, but you did kill a guy, now you have to remain in that city. But you're free to live your life and work a trade and do all this and that and the other thing until the death of the high priest, which is, a set amount of time or a certain number of years or decades it might be, and then you could go back home.
You should only commit crimes when the high priest is old.
Yeah. So you can twist any sort of thing into a loophole for yourself, but that's the other example, right? So a type of house arrest or ankle monitor.
Wise as a serpent and gentle as a dove? I don't know. Wise as a serpent, maybe.
So those are the two, right? So you have holding place until trial, which I think is a biblical prescription for jail, and then you have some kind of limited access to the greater part of the country, but not really interfering with your life otherwise. You can still work and transact and things. You just can't step outside certain boundaries, which is very similar to the ankle monitor probation type of thing we have today. So I think that's very reasonable. But jail as an institution, I think, should not exist. And either the person is dangerous enough that they should not be alive, or they're not dangerous enough that they shouldn't be alive, and therefore they should be working to pay off their debts. And what happens if you refuse? Well, you become the slave of the person that you harmed until you've repaid that. And yes, slavery is a specific biblical. In fact, people say, well, slavery is not only evil, but it's illegal in America. No, it's not. The amendment that outlawed slavery in the Constitution, it says slavery nor involuntary servitude may exist in the United States except as a punishment for a crime whereof they had been duly convicted.
Or if you're working 9 to 5 somewhere.
but that's the point, right? So slavery actually is legal in this country if you are forced to pay back restitution to a victim that you have personally, not somebody your ancestor harmed 60 or 80 or 100 years ago. I'm not talking about reparations, which we mentioned last week. I'm talking about specifically restitution for the victim that you harmed. That is a legal form of slavery.
Now, we're connecting to something that came up last week with the restitution or, the restorational justice where you hurt somebody, you got to make it right. And you were pointing to that, Daniel, and said certain things can't be made right. And so the only way to make it right is you forfeit your life. So you can't un-rape someone. You can't un-murder someone. Right? You just, there's certain things. You can steal their TV. Well, you can restore the TV with interest. Like, there's things you can do to restore things, but some things can't be restored, and so that's where the death penalty comes in. But while you're figuring all that out and you collect the witnesses and all that sort of thing, one, it's you want to keep the if it truly is a dangerous person, keep them off the streets until you know for sure they're safe. So there's that. But also, you talked about the cities of refuge, right? The sanctuary cities in the Old Testament, they're there for people who so that somebody in the wronged individual's family doesn't come hunt you down and take justice in their own hands. They could run to the city of refuge and say, "Hey,
I'm safe while I'm here.
So I'm not sure I quite agree with that interpretation. I know that's a kind of a popular interpretation, but the Avenger of Blood, I think, was a specifically authorized person to carry out. And yes, it may be a part of the victim's family, but I think that was somebody that was authorized by the
They weren't going to have their blood avenged if they were in the protected city until they could stand trial and things.
Sure, and then you had an appeal, right?
Right.
So it's basically an appeal system.
So
type of thing.
So what we're talking about is the system.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the prison system, the institution of jails, and where people are held like forever until they basically like a life in prison sentence, right? They're maybe 25 years old and they live to be 100.
Or 10 consecutive lives in prison.
Exactly, yeah, whatever that's supposed to mean. So they have that sort of ridiculousness because they can reduce their life thing to something less than life. Like they can get off of one of the charges, or they can, there's different ways. But if you stack the life ones, then it's pretty much going to be for life. It's crazy. But what we've turned it into now is
a business.
Yeah, it's a business. It's like labor camps, and I don't even know what.
And it's a prison lobby. It's all privatized. And a lot of it's privatized. There's a lot of money in prisons, and so it's an industry in itself. And that's one of the things this country's done is they have given, because we spend so much tax dollars on so many different things, whole industries are popping up where the money's being spent. And that's what with the renewable energy. I mean, nobody really wanted it. Nobody really cared about it. And there wasn't any real cost saving or anything. So the government subsidized it. And then a whole bunch of people made millions and millions of dollars pretending to be green.
Anyone hearing our voices can tell over the last 10 minutes that what we're saying isn't anywhere near. Because when Daniel first answered, I said, so should we have jails? No. Well, a lot of people on the left, non-biblical people, would agree. Totally different rationale, totally different reasons, and they're letting people out of jail who should be dealt with. So how do we deal with that? So we, as Bible-believing Christians, would all agree, at least the people in this room, say, yeah, jail's not great, prison system's really bad, but that's what we've got. So if we remove it and we don't replace it with a biblical model, is the devil we know better than the devil we don't know? Like, are we kind of stuck with a prison system? Is this just kind of LARPing, live-action role-playing? We're just talking hypothetically.
Well, I think you can't just replace it wholesale. It's just like I'm very much in favor of not having any sort of government benefits, including Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and all that. But you can't just stop tomorrow. There's a whole bunch of people that have been promised something and have made life decisions and investment decisions based on this thing that they were going to receive, that they were promised. So you have to account for that somehow. So you have to have some kind of gradual phase out if you're going to make any sort of changes there. Same thing with the prison system. I think it starts by correcting our understanding of who was wronged by the crime fundamentally and primarily. Yes, like you say, society may at large have some benefit or detriment from certain criminal activities, but the person that was the actual victim, that should always be the priority. And I think once we have that understanding, then we can transition to, okay, well, you're in jail, but because we don't trust that you're actually going to go work for this person, so now you're earning money while you're in jail. You don't get to keep any of that. It's all going to the victim's family until they're paid back, right? So there's ways that you can start to bring in some of those biblical concepts through our current system and then try to change it a little bit. The only way to completely upend and change a system wholesale is some kind of revolution, and that's not good for anybody, generally, until many, many years after the fact.
Now, I think that it would be more ideal if we had a restitution model as opposed to an imprisonment model, but I'm not so sure that I can. This is where I said I've got an opinion, kind of, but there's some nuances I'm still trying to figure out. I'm not so sure I'm comfortable making an argument that governments are somehow sinning against God by having a prison system. There are prisons in both the Old and the New Testament, and there's opportunity for it to be condemned, and there's no language that condemns the jailing of someone or holding somebody in prison. Two of the highest profile people in the Bible were imprisoned, Joseph in the Old Testament, Paul in the New Testament.
Neither of them in a God-honoring country.
But also, those were holding cells.
Well, neither is ours.
Until they went to trial.
Yeah, even Paul's prison was, like you said, it was holding until he could see Caesar. And Caesar just took a sweet time.
Yeah, exactly. He was in prison for a long time.
But that was at least officially.
And so was Joseph. He was in prison for a long time, right?
Yeah.
And I would say that's less ideal. But it's certainly the lesser of the two evils, right? You're not going to have the prisoners just running free. Right? These guilty criminals running free. Something has to be some consequence. Now, it doesn't make sense that the person who got robbed from then has to pay to keep the person in jail. Like, they got robbed from twice.
In many countries, if you're in jail, they don't feed you. They're just keeping you off the streets. If you want food, you better hope you have enough friends and family on the outside that'll bring you food.
Wow, what countries do that?
Almost
the majority of the world does that.
I believe. Now
really?
A lot of the Western world and the more civilized, you know, first world countries, they don't do that anymore. Mm. But in much of the world, that is the case. In a lot of the Middle East, that's the case. In a lot of other countries, that's the case. And it may not be in the last few years. It may have been changing somewhere. But
so the government won't pay for their food, but the government in these other countries will pay for their trans surgeries, right? Because
well, Kamala, everyone Kamala's visited there.
Everybody does that, right? No?
Yeah, I know. No.
So related to this topic of drugs last week, jail so far this week, is how people get there in the first place. A lot of people on the left particularly are concerned that we need to let these prisoners out because they were arrested falsely under false pretenses. They were targeted unfairly. People that look like you two, right? You have a darker olive complexion to your skin. You don't look like you're, you know, Aryan. And so you might get targeted by the police. You might have the security guards at the store look at you a little funny or something. And it's not your fault. And so that leads to the question of profiling. Is it okay for police to engage in making judgments of people based on their appearance?
Well, I would argue that we all make judgments based on appearance. Everyone makes judgments what you're wearing. You're wearing a T-shirt, you're wearing a suit coat, you're wearing shorts or pants or a skirt. You make judgments. You make judgments about your wealth, about your status in life, about how old you are, about what...
If you see somebody walking down the street, and he's got his underwear hanging out of his pants. His pants are down on his knees. He's wearing, you know, this tank top that's ill-fitting. He's got all these tattoos everywhere and piercings. And he's just this big hunking guy walking down the street with a swagger. And then you see another guy, and he's, like, dressed in a business suit, you know, that's well-fitted and got a suit and tie, and he's clean-cut, and he's walking briskly down the sidewalk. These are two people that you're going to assume certain things already, and we didn't talk about what color their skin was. We only talked about everything else about them. So I would argue if you were confronted with these two people walking down the street, and the guy in the suit is black, and the other guy's white, you're going to still be much more apprehensive about this white guy that's you know, walking down in a gangster type of mentality. It doesn't really have to do much with this, with the color of the skin. Now, certainly you can make assumptions. Well, somebody that looked like that did this and such last week to me, and therefore, so you can have your own personal experience that's going to color some of that. But that's going to be the case for all characteristics. I think this country focuses way too much on skin color as the only characteristic that really matters as far as discrimination goes. But discrimination is how God designed our brains, to try to make quick decisions with scanty information, say what is the most logical and probable thing that's going to occur based on X, Y, and Z. So what we have is a guarantee of a fair trial and of innocent until proven guilty and all that. And so there's many people that say, well, I was targeted because of this, just because I looked like such and such. And I think sometimes that may be the case, and sometimes it's just there's a lot of other factors that play into it. That you may not be aware of, and really how you carry yourself does make a huge impact. Go ahead.
No, as I say, if you want to see profiling in action in a non-legal kind of a thing, or in a way you typically don't even think about it, like 25, 30 years ago when I didn't have a wonky back and sore knees, I used to play a lot of pickup basketball. And pickup basketball is usually played outside on like concrete or asphalt kinds of things, right? And it's gritty. And it's fun, and you don't necessarily have to be great to play and have a good time, but people still play competitively. They want to win. If they're going to beat up their backs and knees, they want it to be for something, right? They want to try to win. And sometimes you're showing up, and it's just a bunch of guys, and you don't really know. Now, if you play a lot in the same locales over and over, you begin to recognize guys like, ooh, that guy could really play. But if you're walking onto the court for the first time with a bunch of guys, and you have to pick up a team, almost always the tallest guy is the first guy you try to get on your team.
Mm-hmm. Not only tallest, but usually black people, because they're known to be basketball players, right?
Right, but the tall guy if you got a guy that's 6'8 and a guy that's 5'3, the 6'8 guy is going to get picked first.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that might not be fair because oftentimes
he may not know anything about basketball.
He might be a klutz, right? He can't shoot the ball in the basket from 2 feet away.
But he can get in
the way. He can get in the way. But the 5'3 guy might be an excellent ball handler. He might be able to shoot 3-pointers from all over the place. So you don't know. But you're making these judgments all the time. So
and I don't think it's possible to remove discrimination and profiling from society. I think that's how God designed our brains. Now, prejudice is different, I think, than profiling. And where you have hatred for somebody that looks a certain way because
and assuming
of whatever reason.
They're guilty before any evidence. Because, and that's really what I think when people talk about profiling, that's really the problem with it. You know, if there's a, you know, bull out on somebody and say, hey, this guy was a dark-skinned male of about 25 years old and wearing this, that's profiling. That's how you do it. I mean, you're not going to go and stop every white guy and say, hey, were you at this drugstore recently because they got robbed? I mean, you're like, white and you're not.
It's like playing Guess Who, the game, right? Yeah, you can pretty quickly eliminate a whole bunch of people based on some kind of evidence. But see, that's where there's an APB out on somebody. Somebody was spotted. They have a description. It looks like this. So I think in that case, profiling is very relevant and good, and police should be doing that to find the specific person that's a suspect. If you're just walking down the street and you just stop everybody that is a certain color of skin or a certain height just because, well, I think the reasons that you're doing it probably have a lot to do with it. I think it's much more nuanced than what the Black Lives Matter people would want us to believe.
But didn't Rudy Giuliani put something like that in place in New York where
the stop and frisk type
stuff? Stop and frisk. And it cleaned up the crime tremendously.
Yeah, and you know, if memory serves, it was probably 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. I believe at Montgomery County, just south of Frederick County, they passed some sort of ordinance or whatever that the police were not allowed to pull somebody over merely because the person driving the car fit the description of a criminal that had an APB out on them. So they might be described as somebody who's maybe in their 50s, balding, gray beard, Middle Eastern looking, dressed sharp, sport coat, gray, black and whitish shirt in a nice car. Well, I just basically kind of described Imran. And if there's an APB on somebody that looks just like you who just murdered somebody, I see you. I'm like, that could be the guy. But I'm not allowed as a police officer to pull you over until I have some other reason to pull you over. And if I can't find another reason, then you get to go. That's ridiculous. Right, it's police work. Profiling is police work.
Absolutely.
And just in our personal lives, you know, it's got a bad rap because it's got the word phobic in it, and so it probably should have a bad rap. But xenophobia, the xeno part of it, like the stranger part of it, I think we've got, like, God's given us this instinct to beware the strange, right? To be concerned about things that are different than we're used to because there might be danger. We're not familiar. There might be danger. There was a line in a movie where this guy is trying, he's a con artist, and he's trying too hard to come across as unassuming and safe or whatever. And he's totally beguiling the love interest that he was, you know, targeting. But the love interest's mom was a little sharper, and she wasn't trusting him. And the lady who was being beguiled said, "Mom, why don't you trust the guy?" And the answer she gave was, "I've always felt like strangers should be a little strange." And the fact that this stranger was behaving in a way that made him artificially not strange was an alert. The strange is strange. I think that I think it's good to be a little bit nervous. You do that with dogs. Somebody's walking their dog, and if it's a certain breed of dog or a dog that has a particular posture about it, I'm going to walk to the other side of the street. It's a cute little poodle, and it looks like all, you know, wispy and frail and submissive. I'm maybe going to say, "Hey, can I pet your dog?" Right? We do it in all areas of life, so... Anyway, anybody want to get in a last word?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is there's a big push that police officers will stop somebody that's driving just because they're black. Driving while black has been a big issue. And, you know, if they're looking for somebody that committed a crime and that person is there, they should be able to stop and ask questions. Now, you don't have to answer the questions. The law protects you. You can say, under the advice of my lawyer, I'm not answering any questions.
And they can't search without a warrant. So there's still all those same protections. But
the biggest thing is a lot of these people, these kids or adults, whatever, they act disrespectfully, and that just riles up the police more, and then there's a confrontation. If you act disrespectfully, you're going to be treated disrespectfully.
Hmm. End on those wise words. Imran Razvi. Also from Daniel Razvi, they co-pastor a church in Thurmont called the Church of Mesa Imran, so you can find them online at conqueredbylove.org. I'm Troy Skinner, pastor of Household of Faith in Christ. Find me online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. Of course, you can find this show and this radio station online at WFMD.com. If you go to the website for the station, you'll see the upcoming show for next week listed usually in advance, so you can see what we're talking about. You can access all the old shows. You can find all that stuff through the church website as well, householdoffaithinchrist.com. Till next week, 167 and a half hours from now, God bless.